This is broadcast number 663. It's August the 20th, 1983, Mae Brussel, and it's side two of the tape. Now to get to the really heavy, as if the other wasn't, but the very, very important continuity of what I've just discussed with you and the Dallas Conventions and what is going on in this, just this past week in this country, is tied to the work that I've done in the past. The San Francisco Chronicle has one story this morning, August 20th, born-again Christians' rising role in the GOP party. And it tells about getting the Christian drive out to vote to support the Republican Party and how important the Christians will be to this party. Now, that by itself would not mean so much, except that on the McNeil-Lehrer report, Friday, August the 17th, I have to send for that, they were talking about the different spectrum of the Republican Party, from the, if there is a left or middle, like Senator Lowell Weicker, to the far right. And there was a gentleman on, I didn't catch his name, I have to send for it, I thought it sounded like Jarman, but I'm not sure. And he was saying that he represented the Christian religious right, and that they were not going to get out of the party. Mr. Phillips, the conservative, said we should have our own party. He said, we're not getting out of the Republican Party. The network is there. The frame is there. We are going to infiltrate the party and take it over and make it a Christian party. And we're going to get Ted Kennedy out so he doesn't try to run as a Democrat in 1988. That was the way the program went, that one of the political parties in the United States would now be a Christian party. And that's exactly what the Young Americans for Freedom were brought from Munich, Germany, to come over to help with the assassination of a Kennedy, with Robert Morris and the far right wing, Morris of the Vatican, Sovereign Military Order of Vatican again, and set up a coup in Dallas. And by 1984, when the elections come, he has said on the air, we are going to turn that party into a Christian party. And they specifically mentioned Senator Ted Kennedy. Well, the same day that he had Ted Kennedy's name on the air, August the 17th, Ted Kennedy was almost killed in Massachusetts. He had a car crash. Luckily, he wasn't badly hurt. He had cuts and bruises. His car was hit by a head-on pickup truck near Cape Cod. Now, everyone who knows the Kennedy family knows that they travel with their sons at Cape Cod in the summer at Hyannisport, and one of the children, his son, was injured in the crash when the car came head-on with the truck. This is Robert Kennedy, and also Thomas Gargan, 13 years old, the son of a friend of Ted Kennedy's. Now, there have been other kamikaze murder crashes that I don't want to detail now, but I don't want you to think I forgot about them. One was the McDonald's shootout of a member of the Posse Comitatus in the far-right party, who told his wife, I'm going to out and hunt people and kill them. The massacre in San Diego at McDonald's, the massacre in Westwood Village, where this fellow plowed into cars on purpose at the time of the Olympic Games, the San Francisco cable car crash, the Iranian with important secretive links to intelligence and computer work and government agencies in this country. He took his car and plowed it straight down into the cable car. There were three massacres where people were injured and killed, these three types of massacres, and attempted mass murders of people with the identical backgrounds and secrets of their background. And here's a head-on pickup truck that goes into Senator Kennedy at the time when this man is saying, we will take over the party like Hitler did with the political party in Germany so that Kennedy isn't around. Now, another story that is very important to something I've mentioned on the programs is the plan to update the Constitution and change the Constitution. And this was in the San Francisco Chronicle, August 17th this week. And I'll do the details of what they want. There's just two things that are important to mention now. If the president is voted in as one party, they want the same party that controls the White House to control all the Congress. If Reagan gets in, then all the Congress should be Republican. And they would like to be able for the president to dissolve all of Congress and call for new elections anytime he wants. He can dissolve it if they don't behave themselves, and he can ease the restrictions that the Senate has on treaties. So the idea of doing over the Constitution appeared again. Both Republicans and Democrats have a finger in this. The exact same time, that the convention is going now. Another big story that we could do an entire hour on is the attempt to reunify Germany at this time. Now, as soon as Richard von Weizsäcker, Weizsäcker, became the president of Germany in May, he was a Nazi in Nazi Germany. His father worked with von Ribbentrop. Von Ribbentrop helped Hitler with the invasion of Poland in 1939. Almost from the day he was the president, he promised millions of dollars to El Salvador to wipe out the native population. He has heated up the argument for the reunification of Germany. And I have about 30 articles, and maybe you've seen them. Save them, because by themselves they may not mean anything to you, but together we'll discuss them at length. William Sapphire has a story, The Reunification of Germany, New York Times, August the 12th. The Kremlin views Bonn's recent loan as a Trojan horse. As soon as this Nazi was president of Germany, the Western Germans and Mr. Strauss and the worst conservatives gave $330 million to East Germany, and now they're saying, open up the gates, we'll give you money if you flood into West Germany. And this is the beginning of the resurgence of the Reinhardt-Galen legacy from World War II. I always call this the popcorn syndrome when I talk to my family or friends about it. You have a jar on your shelf with a bottle of unpopped corn, just the seeds, and you put it under heat, whether it's 20 years or 40 years, you keep raising the fire on, and pretty soon you have a whole kitchen full of popcorn. Well, the heat is on now, so the crises are showing where they didn't show before, or the size of them showing. The Wall Street Journal has an article on East Germany's deceptive detente. What they don't take into account is that East Germany and West Germany are predominantly still all Nazis who've been given the name East Germany, but worked their way up. And so now they're getting closer, and all of a sudden the Soviet Union, with good reason, is very nervous about the proximity of the two and promising to make it one. In these speeches and articles, they're promising to make one Germany, and the Soviet Union broke that up after the war, and for a good reason, because they've had several attempts to wipe them out. This is the third time, and the reunification of Germany, the money going, the people involved, the Nazis involved, and particularly the new president of Germany, it came right after he was made president. He's done many acts that go back to the old Nazi behavior, but if you have Hermann Apps from Nuremberg sitting in charge of the Vatican Bank, the Nazi that worked with IG Farben and extermination at Dachau, and you let that one go, then what do you expect? Now, to heat up this East-West war at the American Bar Association was Attorney General William French Smith saying that the KGB had forged letters to these athletes. I mentioned that earlier for one moment. Then you read the article in the small print. The letters were never passed around. They were never identified. The scientific analysis, according to the FBI, reveals they are classic examples of Soviet forgery, according to William French Smith. And as I said, when you read the small print, you find that there's a question about these letters. They won't make them public. They do not show them. They're not to the scrutiny of everybody who wants to see them. They are as secretive as the Oswald diary that Gerald Ford and Henry Luce linked. The diary has never been wiped off for fingerprints. When they showed it to Marina Oswald, first witness before the Warren Commission, they said, this is a diary a copy of a diary purported to have been written by your husband. Nobody in the 26 volumes ever mentions the original or the examination of it. And I have almost, I guess, every book written on the Kennedy assassination is about 270. And I beg some person to go into the diary and find the diary, because when you let forged documents such as E. Howard Hunt forging the State Department papers saying that Kennedy ordered the murder of Diem, or forging these letters to say that the FBI wants to discredit the Klan. The Klan is so great. And William French Smith is coming in on that. This is another part of heating up the Cold War, making it hot the way that the State Department and Ronald Reagan wanted. Now, Ronald Reagan's quotation about wanting to wipe out the Soviet Union and that he's pleased to announce it'll begin in 5 minutes was no joke. They call it a joke, and Reagan blames the press for carrying it. Not for what he said, but that is no joke. If you think it's a joke, go back to what Richard Pipe said about wiping out the Soviet Union. there's no difference. What he's doing is making himself endeared to the far right wing of the party, who he makes sure they won't shoot him or get him out of the way for George Bush, and he wants to show how radical he is and where his mind really is. That was no slip. Reagan makes hardly any slips. There's one story in the Oregonian that was mailed to me by a listener. Military plans may force 1990 draft. We're planning to have a draft. Why? If we want peace. Another story, Reagan prods senators to back the MX missile. He wants the 10 warhead weapon that would cost, starting with $6 billion. And that is no sign that he really wants peace. It looks more like he wants to bomb the Soviet Union. The Washington Spectator was mailed to me by another subscriber. It just has some brief figures on the billions of dollars. Where does the money go making weapons today? Air Force budget is increased 35.9%. The B-1 bomber costs $8.2 billion, that contract. The Navy's budget is up 33.5%. The Aegis cruiser is a $3.2 billion budget. Can you imagine the F-18 fighter, $2.8 billion budget, piling up weapons? In this article, it says, similar to what we did in Vietnam, and getting ready, and compared to Hitler's Blitzkrieg, trying to go over the plains of Europe, and do they think that'll work? The article says it hardly will work, but they'll try it. And that's what Ronald Reagan was talking about. And if you want, we can do more on his so-called joke, but it wasn't a joke. Now, Ronald Reagan made his friend William Wilson, his close friend and man in charge of his personal finances, the envoy to the Vatican. But before Wilson went through, and after he mentioned he was going to do this, there was a story in the California Telegram, the Tribune, that said, Bishop calls for world government. And there's a picture of Archbishop Laghi, L-A-G-H-I, the envoy of the Vatican, who was just entertained at Reagan's ranch just last week before the conventions began. The Catholic bishops talk about a world order. They have a section in the Catholic bishop's letter on war and peace, a section entitled World Order in Catholic Teaching, calling for an end to the present system of government by independent nation states. Here, the bishops denounce the inadequacy of independent government and call for a more integrated international system. They said, we're entering an era of global interdependence requiring global systems of government, and they call Catholic educators to train their young people to accept a world government. Now, the far right wing always says that Nelson Rockefeller is the world government, the trilateral. These are the Catholic bishops saying that a centralized world government would be best for today and to increase their activism in world affairs. The St. Louis Review, printed in August the 12th, 1983. The Holy See is more powerful than the United Nations, and they said they seek justice, human rights, and world peace. Well, you know what they did with Adolf Hitler, and the Catholic group funded, the Holy See funded Adolf Hitler. Any world political force could not ignore the Roman Catholic institution with roughly 1 billion people under its influence. The result, according to the requirements of Catholic doctrine, would be the establishment of Catholicism as the world religion. This was in a paper just before Mr. Archbishop Laghi, L-E-G-H-I, became the envoy to the Vatican. Now, at the time that they were having the hearings on the Vatican, and this is important because of getting back to the Republican convention, and we can do some of these articles in detail later, Mr. Laghi was accused of asserting that the Pope's religious authority gives him a diplomatic standing in the world over above governments, a point that a Baptist joint committee contended at the time was an issue from the time the president won ambassador to the Vatican, that the Holy See had spiritual sovereignty, not over the dominion of a few acres in the heart of Rome, but over the entire world. This is what he wants, and this is what a few people wanted to stop, was the political push for an ambassador. This is in the Washington Times, but the Catholic Church won out, and Ronald Reagan won out, even though they want a one-world government under the Catholic Church. Mr. Luigi Laghi, L-A-G-H-I, was appointed as the envoy from the Vatican as soon as Mr. Wilson, who interferes with the Marcinkus case and Paul Rich and so forth, is appointed. Now, last week before the War Council in Monterey, just a week before in report, before the Republican convention in Dallas, Texas, which, again, a few blocks away, I said the Nazis in Europe and the Vatican, the OSS, the CIA had offed Kennedy at a corner walking distance from where the convention is. Reagan entertained this Archbishop Pio Laghi at his home. He's only had the camera up at the ranch three times for a press conference. One for a certain foreign affairs reference that he made or decision to sign something. Two, when Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip visited. Three, he wanted to be visualized at his ranch, and every single paper in the United States was there and invited to photograph and carry the story. Partly because Geraldine Ferraro is a Catholic and he wants to show I'm having my bunch of grapes and carrots and so forth with the Vatican envoy. But what they were doing, he was conferring with him on sanctions. He was discussing political matters with this envoy from the Vatican about Eastern Europe. And also, as I said earlier, we now have a Nazi president of Germany that's going to combine the two Europes. We have a pope who's Polish, an American envoy into the Vatican, and this story says it is rare for the president to interrupt his 18-day vacation at the ranch for such a meeting, especially since he already had decided to lift the sanctions. But he wanted to be photographed. Larry speaks emphasis on the consultation between Reagan and John Paul II and his representatives was unusual, especially considering the pains the Catholic presidential candidates have taken to stress their independence from the church, such as John Kennedy. He wanted the world to see that I'm asking the envoy from the Vatican what I should do in Poland. Not anybody who wants peace or to get along, but the Vatican, 99% Catholic, ran the concentrations in Poland. He's asking what we should do in Poland. And then, a week and a half later, another story, Polish farm aid sought by Reagan, and this is where it gets really iffy and dangerous. And I'll finish these articles. On the international scene and all of this happening this week, Ronald Reagan spoke to a group of Polish people, and he promised them he would ask Congress for $10 million for Polish farmers. This is at a time when about over 100,000 American farms are closing. Small farms, ma and pa, crisis like the Depression of American farms. He wants our Congress, you, the taxpayers, to give $10 million to Polish farmers. But here is the most horrendous that fits in with the background I gave before. He wants the Vatican to dispense the money to the farmers. Reagan has asked for money. Now, the Vatican gave Lech Walesa $50 million, and it seemed to go down the drain. But in his speech, interrupted 24 times by applause, he said there's no reason to absolve Soviet Union from its commitment made after World War II to have free elections. Well, when the Soviet Union went to Yalta, when the Soviet Union went to Tehran, they weren't agreeing then that, or did they know that for 2 years previous, the Nazis were working with the American government, SS Karl Wolf was running Treblinka, Nazis in Italy occupation, Vatican, and working with Alan Dulles at Bern, Switzerland. They didn't know when they went to Yalta or Tehran that Reinhard Gehlen would become American officer in uniform to fly the United States and set up what Harry Truman called a Gestapo. They didn't know that the top Nazis of every country would be incorporated into the Anti-Communist League and continue the war, World War II. World War II never ended. When Yalta and Tehran took place, little did they dream that von Braun and Werner von Braun and Walter Dornberger would be brought to this country. War criminals, stockpiles of bones, slave labor, bombing Europe with missiles, and people like von Braun would start building his legacy, our space stations, or that Dornberger would be hiring Michael Payne in Dallas-Fort Worth, the home where Lee Oswald and Marina Oswald stayed. So he's telling them that we can't absolve the Soviet Union of those agreements, and you don't have to be under permanent subjugation. We will free you, he says, on the 40th anniversary of the Warsaw Uprising against the Nazis. All of a sudden, they were anti-Nazi. And he said, we will help you be free from the Soviet Union. So this past week, the German Nazi president is saying, East and West Germany will be dissolved. The President of the United States is meeting with the Vatican envoy, and the money to go to the farmers would go from our Congress to the Vatican, and they would dispense it. The aid fund would be administered by the Roman Catholic Church in Poland. Now, what guarantee, then, they wouldn't buy guns and plant evidence and continue the propaganda against Eastern Europe? Our congressmen, if they want to give aid, should take it over in their little hands and find their little farmers and put a few seeds in each hand, like we do down in Africa where the drought is, and we throw them seeds with no water. What in the heck would our Congress fund the Vatican, dispense with money? That is the end of the separation of church and state 1,000 times over. You can write to your congressman on this, and if you don't have the wire service story, it was an Associated Press story on Reagan's promises to the American people and the Polish people. You give me that $10 million plus, and we will give it to the Vatican to dispense. This is not a Catholic country, and they should not give it to the Polish farmers, because that Pope worked at Auschwitz for IG Farben. He hired his boss, who paid his checks when he worked at Solvay Chemical, and now we're going to aid the farmers by way of the Vatican. The Vatican should not dispense 1 cent of American dollars. This is not a Catholic country yet, or a Christian country yet, such as I heard on the McNeil-Lehrer report. And his promises that they would have that should really, really be questioned. And then he ends his speech, may you live 100 years, they're praising him. And he ends it, you know, with accolades. And the head of the Polish Council of Unity in the United States gave him the cross of the Home Army of Poland. And they sang in Polish, may you live 100 years. He's lived long enough. I think he's lived too long, but that's another point when he goes that far. And then finally, with the Dallas, Texas story, and then we can go back and summarize this, because this was a really heavy news week. Neil Regan, the president's older brother, called his White House and said, hey, brother, the Democrats didn't have any minister speaking at their convention. I think you should have a minister, a religious person, pray for the Republicans at their convention. This is the way the cover story goes. Sent to me by the Oregonian. I'm getting some wonderful articles from a friend up there that I don't see in many other places. So Brother Neil, who followed Mr. Goldwater, quoted over again of his radicalism in defense of freedom, the 1964 speech, and that's when he told Ronnie, you should be the governor, and pushed, in quotes, that's when he did it. I know Ronnie was decided for this role many, many years ago before that, but there has to be a cover story of succession. Neil Regan calls the White House and says, you know, the Democrats didn't have any religious people. So Ronnie calls him back and he says, dear brother, as the only Catholic in our family, you'll be happy to know that on the final night of the Republican convention, when I speak, the session will be open for prayer by the new Archbishop of California, John O'Connor. When I speak, the Catholic will be there. Now, this isn't necessarily trying just to counteract the Geraldine Ferrara Catholic vote. Reagan, long before he knew the vice president was going to be, was pulling in the Catholic fascists, Licio Gelli, Michael Sindona, Mr. Della Chaye that I talked about last week, the P2, the fascist link of the Vatican Party, the death squads from South America, from Spain, from France, the people, Otto Skorzeny, with the great train robbery in England, money going down to Brazil. Reagan has worked with all those cookies. This isn't new. But to summarize this past week, just to get it really straight, with the Dallas convention, this John DeLorean got off with his links to Klaus Barbie and the Nazis in South America. And involved in his trial was Gordon Novell, who also participated, or allegedly participated, and won't ever be charged or questioned, with the murder of John Kennedy a few blocks from where their convention is. And the team that represented him are tied to other mob cases, to the drug cases, the Manson family, the counterintelligence terrorism. The meeting on this peninsula was of the heavies. We'll never, I suppose, know what 60 people were present. Some of the meetings, I understand, will be printed, but I can't believe they came all the way out here to have a public meeting of what they did, and that you're going to see every word that was said when they broke to have dinner or after the meetings at night or when they arrived. When you get Vernon Walters and Winston Lord and Richard Pipes and Mr. Manges and Lieutenant General Edward Rowney and Mr. Matlock, head of Soviet affairs, talking about Grenada, and Mr. Sanchez from the Defense Department, the Inter-American Affairs, you have a war powwow that will lead to World War III. These people have taken Grenada. Now, the next step after Grenada is Cuba or Nicaragua, in whichever order you want it. Long before Russia was in Central America, long before Castro was in Central America, United Fruit, the United Brands was taken over in Guatemala by the CIA, by John J. McCloy, by Alan Dulles, the same people around the Warren Commission, the same people that want to make the world safe for profits, to starve out the laborers. This has nothing to do with Marxism in Central America. It has to do with slave labor and profits, and the people rising up against the Somoza family and wanting their own country. And the day that they were kicked out, we began in Miami, Florida, and other cities training them to get those people away and put the Somoza army in. That team will go from Grenada to, they've done other countries, Chile and Pakistan, and South Vietnam, Vietnam, South Korea, you name it, the country that they've overthrown. But they're going from Grenada to Nicaragua, then Cuba, or Cuba, Nicaragua. You can throw that around either way. I wouldn't guess which first. And then the Soviet Union. Mr. John Layman is covering the oceans up above the Arctic Circle, up above Alaska and Siberia, those oceans, and all around Asia, circling it with ships. Our missiles will be deployed, and this team will take the gobble up these little countries that are of no value to anybody except as places to put missiles and bases and exploitation. They, after all this is done, by then Poland will have its uprisings. We will promise Russians, you have to deliver Poland for its, in quotes, freedom, to make it safe for war and concentration camps again. And Germany will be united, Asia surrounded, and this is what was happening with John Layman over there in China, promising them, don't worry if we send Taiwan a few weapons, we'll give you some also. We will have a circle, Turkey and the China, around the Soviet Union, getting ready for the lifelong dreams of Ronald Reagan. If he's not alive, they'll carry it on from him. But as I say, that little speech he gave at the warm-up was nothing but a terrorist speech indicating that I'm ready for World War III. They took a portrait of Ronald Reagan to Dallas made out of jelly beans. The image of him, the man with the jelly beans and the balloons, when they asked him about the article in Penthouse, or Playboy rather, no, it was Penthouse with the Miss America, and he didn't want to see it. He said, no, I'm a good boy. He refers to himself as a child, a boy, and he has these jelly bean portraits, and as I say, the blown up air, the hot air in the cavities, but this man is a vicious, vicious man, and his speech was not an error. And his meeting with the envoy from the Vatican, speaking to the Polish people, the German Nazi, and traveling East and West Germany, getting ready to unite. These are very serious times, and every day escalating are these meetings of instigations to get control of every land base. As I say, all Central America is the only thing left. South America is almost all Nazi and conservative anyway, and they can wipe out the Bolivian democracy in 10 minutes when they want, and overthrow the president in Argentina. They sit on a like a ball of jelly in a hot day's sun with the technology we have now to get what you want. These are very serious times. The war team was here. They will go out and praise themselves with Grenada, learn what mistakes they made, have the news next time, handpick the news people that'll be there, praise themselves for their success, and figure what little steps to make it palatable the next time so that there's no goose that somebody says, you bombed the mental hospital first. These stories are very important. And then next week and in the weeks to come, I'll take some of these that I ran over very quickly and detail them, such as the LAPD story and other stories, because individually they make a sum total, and individually rather, they give a lot of more small parts of the big picture, but collectively they give a sum total. And that's what I was trying to do with you on this broadcast. I think that 1943 when the Nazis went under, 1963 when Kennedy was killed, and 1983 with the conventions, and 1984 the cycle of stirring these problems, 1983 the Grenada invasion, 1984 the elections, and then stirring up Poland and Germany is a well-constructed time plan working on time that really should be dissected by historians and people who love peace now before it's too late. Well, that's all for this hour. This is Mae Brussel. I'll be back with you next week. I hope. I will. I'll be okay. Take care, and I'll be back with you next week.